Oh, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. Well, in the West, at the same time that we are experimenting with hyper-individualism, we hunger for true community and we look for it in many places. Well, Hugh McKay is a social researcher, a psychologist, a novelist, and the author of more than a dozen books. Australians turn to him to discern our ills and find wisdom for the road ahead. His latest book is all about community and it's called The Art of Belonging. He came into the studio at CPX to talk about the book and I began by asking him why this book and why now?
This is one of those books that is stating the obvious in a way. I mean, this is a book, I realise, is a book that's telling the readers something that they deeply know within themselves. But the reason I've written it is that it's one of those things that I think we need to be reminded of, and that comes to the why now question, because I think the deep truth about human beings, which is that we are social creatures, that we absolutely rely on each other for our sense of identity, for our emotional security, for our physical safety. As a species, we're pathetic in isolation. We absolutely need communities. But at the moment, in Australia, in contemporary Western society in general, the sort of changes that are reshaping our society, taking each of them in isolation, we can say, well, you know, that's just the way the world is. Put them all together, the cumulative effect is to take us away from the sense of community, to break down the cohesiveness and the stability of local communities and neighbourhoods in particular, to make us much more selective about the people we'll spend time with, which is nice, but bad for us, bad for our social and even our moral development. So I think it's timely to remind us that if we acknowledge the value of belonging, if we recognise that as a species we are utterly dependent upon communities to nurture us and sustain us, then it's a two-way street. We've got to remember that in spite of all the factors that are pushing us away from that, we've got to put in the effort to keep those communities strong.
Now, you call it the art of belonging, which suggests there's a bit of skill required and a bit of effort in doing this well.
The title is very carefully chosen for that reason. This is not something that just happens unless we are working at it. I mean, it just happens in a family. You're born into a family, you belong to the family. That's kind of a genetic accident. But all the other communities that we belong to, they don't just happen, and they can very easily fragment and dissolve and collapse, or they can become places where there are intense rivalries, hostility, competition, etc., all of which diminishes our sense of ourselves as an essentially cooperative species. That's who we really are, but in 2015, in Western society, like Australia, it's very easy to lose sight of that.
Lots of commentators talk about us experimenting with this age of hyper-individualism. And yet, with that, and you identify this in your book, we hunger for community. It's a kind of contest within ourselves.
Yes. The pendulum has swung absurdly in the direction of saying, well, we're all individuals, And it's in our nature to be ruthlessly self-interested, to be highly competitive, to be aggressive towards people that stand in the way of us achieving our personal goals. The quest for self-knowledge, you know, who am I? This is the main thing. It's all about what I'm entitled to, my sense of happiness, my material prosperity, whatever it might be. We've gone absurdly in that direction. Of course, we have a sense of ourselves as unique individuals, but a much deeper sense of ourselves as interdependent. Our independence is a tiny, tiny part of the story.
Now, the danger for us is not that we forget that we're individuals, is it? It's that we forget the value of community.
That's right.
And you, interestingly, defend this idea of the village, which seems to be very attractive to people. It's this urban environment, but one that's nonetheless cohesive and yes. has this sort of local feel yes. to it.
Yes.
Do you think this is a kind of achievable thing today?
I think it's absolutely achievable. And I think the reason why the word village has become such a high fashion word, you know, every suburban shopping centre is the Cameray village. The high-rise apartment block is the vertical village, and the cluster housing for people in retirement is the retirement village. I think the reason why we've adopted that as a sort of magic word is that it reminds us of what we're missing and what we'd really like to achieve. And we fantasize that we'd have to go to a physical village, preferably a rustic, rural village to achieve this. But the reality all around Australia is that people in highly urbanized or suburban settings can create the essence of a village. I remember in research a few years ago talking to a group of young mothers in the Sydney suburb of Mascot, right sort of on the perimeter of Sydney Airport, light industrial area. From the outside looking at it, you'd say not a particularly beautiful or promising kind of environment. But these young women with little kids were saying, why would anyone ever want to live anywhere but Mascot? Imagine wanting to live in the eastern suburbs or up the North Shore, they said, in this disparaging way.
They found something there.
Yeah, and what they were saying was, we've got neighbours here. You know, we know each other. We're making this, they didn't use the word village, but I interpreted as them saying, this has become our village. The kids know each other, we know each other. And that's magical when it works.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that because you defend the suburbs in your book as a place where community can really happen. And yet you also recognise this thing where people, especially with their very close neighbours, are a bit reluctant to get too involved because it might be too costly. Is this part of the problem, that true community is costly and some of us are unsure if we're willing to pay that price?
Yes, yes. Costly is a good word. Vulnerable is a good word. I think when we, in any personal relationship, if it's going to work, we make ourselves vulnerable to each other. We open up to each other. Now, neighbours don't have to be close friends. Neighbours don't even have to go into each other's homes for a cup of tea if they don't want to. Neighbour is a particular kind of role. But it does involve getting to know each other, having a bit of shared time, making eye contact, saying hello when you see people in the street and so on. And that there is a level of vulnerability in that, which, by the way, contrasts with the burgeoning online communities, which feel like community to many people. But what's missing, apart from the fact that they don't do what you and I are doing, they don't exchange facial expressions and they can't read tone of voice and posture and gestures and all those rich, nuanced aspects of a human encounter, which carry so much meaning. But the other thing that's missing online is vulnerability. It's very easy to keep the whole exchange at arm's length.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Today I'm bringing you an interview with Hugh McKay, the author of The Art of Belonging. Now you've thought a lot about this, you've observed lots of things. How well do you think we're doing in terms of establishing good communities these days?
I think there are pockets around Australia. It's probably easier to achieve in regional Australia than in the big metro areas. But in many, many pockets, I hear thrilling stories of people who are making communities work. It usually takes a few leaders. By leaders, I mean just someone in the street who's taking it on themselves to invite people in for Christmas drinks or to walk up and down and call in on the people who we know are sick or alone and make sure they're okay. It happens brilliantly. But the pressure in contemporary society for it not to happen is quite intense. So there are many, many communities where people say, well, the neighbourhood doesn't work like a community the way I remember it when I was a kid. And I think that's not just nostalgia. I think they're pointing to an important truth about contemporary society, which is that there are all these reasons why it's harder to make a local neighbourhood function like a community.
Yes, and is it true then that communities that are true communities will include people who aren't all just like me?
Yes, yes. We pick our friends, and that's a friendship circle, and that's a community in a way. Or we belong to a particular church, that's a faith community, etc. Although even within that community, there'll be a lot of diversity. But in order to evolve fully as moral beings, we have to learn the lessons of tolerance and forgiveness and inclusion. And that involves, I think, for most of us, playing a part in the local neighbourhood, which is people we didn't choose to live with. Very few people interview all the people who live in a street where they're thinking of renting or buying a house or a flat. They just move in and then they hope for the best. And the little miracle works over and over again, but it doesn't always work. I mean, sometimes people do remain standoffish, and particularly in high density housing settings, the high-rise apartment block, people get obsessed with privacy because there's too much vulnerability when you're crammed into that sort of high-density living. But generally speaking, I think in order to be socially mature, but in order to be fully morally sensitive, we do have to learn the lessons of getting along with people we didn't choose to live with.
I want to ask you about religious communities, because they do score very well on these measurements of good neighbourliness and community involvement. I wonder if you could comment on why that you think that might be.
Religious communities are a very interesting example of the whole spirit of belonging in action in several ways. Most people who study faith communities recognise that people join and belong to those communities not only because they share particular religious convictions, they don't necessarily tick all the same doctrinal or dogmatic boxes, although they may have some shared underlying sense of faith, but they also value being part of a community of people who are interested in the same questions, who are interested in exploring a particular view of the world, making sense of it with them. So the social connectedness of faith communities is probably as important to the members of those communities as the particular religious perspectives that are involved. And those communities, they play a crucial role in the book. They play a crucial role in life, in society in general. Even people who don't attend a church and have no desire to attend a church will very typically say, we like having churches in our community. We like seeing people, you know, gathering together in those communities, because we know, in spite of all the really horrible stuff about the institutional church, the child abuse and the political intrigues and the materialism and the arrogance and all those things that happen to all institutions, including religious institutions, nevertheless, at the local level, people in a faith community are being nurtured in the idea of service to others, of being useful members, not just of that religious community, but of the local community that they live in. And churches at their best are not just serving the faithful, they're serving the community.
Well, your previous book about the life worth living said that the life worth living really is the life lived for the sake of others. Is this book now on community the place where this lands?
Yes, it's very much, I suppose, a sequel in a way, or an extension, or an illustration of how that principle works in practice. It's the great paradox of the good life, that our deepest contentment, our deepest satisfactions, you know, the deepest source of meaningfulness in our lives comes from responding to the needs of other people for the very things that we also need. But by focusing our attention on the needs of other people, that's where the rich sense of meaningfulness comes. And the art of belonging is about how we do it.
Well, that was social researcher, psychologist and author Hugh McKay talking about his latest book, which is out now, The Art of Belonging. Great to have your company on Life and Faith. We'll see you next time.